Hi, welcome to Money Matters TV. I'm your host, Patty Tawadros from Zercel, and my co-host today is Michael Donahue. We have a show that is very timely and very interesting on taxes, something I don't like to talk about, which is a good time to talk about it. So it's really great to see you today.
Nice to see you, Patty.
So you work with Drucker and Schicchetti, right?
That's right. Drucker and Schicchetti, we're a 70-person CPA firm here in Philadelphia, and our client base is family held businesses and their owners. And we like to say that tax is a business strategy. We use taxes as a business strategy, and our whole goal is to service our clients in deferring or saving taxes, but we also deal with business succession issues and whatnot for our clients.
So you help people plan how to exit their businesses?
That's right. That's a very hot topic these days, business succession. Not just from a tax standpoint, but from a business standpoint.
I went through a Goldman Sachs class, and one of the things that everyone talked about is, what's your exit strategy for your business? And I don't have successors, I don't have kids. So for me, it's to sell the business, but it was really interesting to talk about selling it to your employees or...
Right. Yeah, oftentimes when you look at the scope of potential buyers for your business, it's either internal, it could be your management team or your family, oftentimes it's the family, or it's a third party, so you're selling to a third party. And I would say the vast majority of the time you are selling to a party, to a third party. But there are effective ways of planning for that transaction to lower taxes and also to keep the value of the company high during the transaction.
So if someone's thinking about selling, how far out should they start planning something like that?
Well, like any other transactional type issue, earlier is the better. The earlier the better, but the best time to get involved is when there's a known transition that's going to occur. Someone's aging, someone might be ill. You know, it's always good to be well ahead of that curve, and also not just from a transactional standpoint, but from grooming standpoint, grooming the next successor to continue the business forward.
I know one thing that people talked about in my class is when you're selling and you think somebody's just going to replace your position as the owner, if you're actually doing the work, then you're selling somebody a job. You're not selling them a business that operates without them. So I guess you're right. You would need to bring someone in and groom them and make the business be able to run without the owner ever touching it.
And it may run differently than the original owner. I mean, hopefully it's growing in the situation. It's growing, and it's growing in value. So, keeping your workforce in place is a very important part of keeping that value high. So management is very important in a transition.
So now that we're in high tax season, right?
Yes, I would say so. February 1st, yes, we're
right.
High
we're
tax
closing
season.
Closing in on it.
That's right.
I know I have a bookkeeper for the last few years, and it's really made my life fantastic. Is that a service that you guys offer your clients?
We do not offer that directly, but we do offer it indirectly. So we're basically more of a planning firm. Mm-hmm. We do tax returns and tax compliance, but for bookkeeping itself, we actually use bookkeepers that we have relationships with. Mm-hmm. But a good bookkeeper can really make our job a lot easier, and by making our job a lot easier, we spend more time on the planning and the value added, the higher value added services that a company might need.
So you do the tax returns for your customers?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's what I thought, and then I thought maybe you were saying you didn't do it.
No, but yeah. When I say tax preparation and compliance, we do the returns, but we spend probably half of our time on planning for our clients.
So how often do you talk to a client besides the tax return time? Quarterly?
I guess it has to do with the complexity of a client, but if a client has many different product offerings or many different operating in different states or different countries, you're talking monthly, but at a minimum it's twice a year for a simple client and quarterly for most clients.
I would tell you that the embarrassing thing, my business is about 16 years old, and for the first few years my old business partner used to do the finances, took care of it, and we had an accountant. I didn't have to worry about it, and then suddenly I had to do it, and I wasn't really good at QuickBooks, so I would put the bills in, and I would collect payment in QuickBooks, but once a year I would sit down for about 30 hours and transcribe my bank statements into Excel for my accountant. It was a nightmare.
That's really sad. I'm sorry to hear that. Actually, that's a tough way to spend 30 hours.
Yeah, I had no idea that if I would just pay the bookkeeper, my life would be so much better.
And oftentimes, that the transactions that you put in throughout the year in QuickBooks that may not have been perfect, if you hand it off to the appropriate bookkeeper, they can work through that very quickly, not 30 hours. You know? So
yeah.
They can make sense of it really quick.
So. I think that's a big thing that accountants can educate their customers. Hey, this year, you made me file an extension every year for the last 5 years. Maybe you should need a bookkeeper. It's not that expensive.
Right.
Yeah, it was that fear of how expensive it is.
I think a bookkeeper does much more than help you get a good tax return. It gives you a better sense of what your business is doing on a more regular basis, so you can make more informed decisions.
Yeah, she definitely helps me with that stuff.
Yeah.
So let me ask you this question from the reader, which makes no sense to me.
Okay.
With tax law changes, will there be any estate planning changes for the business owner? And this comes from Richard Thomas in Philadelphia.
Yeah, so I where we are right now, we have a new president, and there are a lot of new agendas that the president has. So just put it in context, you know, the agenda of the president is primarily, there's three that I would really think that are important to him right now. And one is the repeal and replacement of Affordable Care Act, which our next guest I know is going to talk about. And that's we see that in the press right now, what the president is trying to do. Secondly, he wants to have a very expansive infrastructure spending program in the country. But right up there with that is tax reform. He wants a more comprehensive tax reform, and he's joined there by the Speaker of the House. And the Speaker of the House has a very comprehensive tax plan that he wants to get through Congress and through and out and employed in the business in our business today. Regarding estate taxes, the one thing where all the Republicans are on the same page is estate tax repeal. Repeal the estate tax. So that's the Senate, the House, and the President are all on the same page there with estate tax repeal. So that does not mean that we do not have to worry about, as Richard's question said, business succession issue anymore. We're saying that, you know, gift tax is still going to be there. So a person that has a business today, I don't think is served well by assuming that if estate tax is repealed, they do not have to do any more business succession or estate planning. Just the opposite. There is still going to be a gift tax that needs to be handled, and that's the essence of business succession, gifting to the next generation.
Let me ask you, just a follow-up. I've heard recently that if you have $1 million, you can create an estate. That's the minimum to open an estate where you can put all your property. Is that true?
I don't know what the context of that question is, but it's not untrue.
Talk about, question being estate planning, and I think that between my husband and I, we have a few homes. And I think, do we put the homes in there, or do we need to get? That's the kind of stuff that would help us do.
Yeah, so a family that has that, you know, assets like maybe a business or a couple homes and maybe marketable securities, you know, retirement plans is very typical. It's really, you know, estate taxes are really now. You have to have $11 million as a married couple to be exposed to estate taxes today.
Oh.
$11 million.
That's a lot.
Virtually, I believe last year there were only 1,500 estate tax returns filed. So it's not hitting many people, the estate tax.
Okay.
However, there are still opportunities to take care of the estate tax becomes less important, and income tax becomes more important. So the titling of assets are important. The elections that are available upon the first spouse to die are important. It's still important to plan appropriately, but you're not planning for estate tax. You're planning more for income tax.
Sounds like I need to make an appointment to talk to you.
Yeah, sure. Love to. Yes.
All right. Well, I'm sure that some of you have questions as well, and if you'd like to send them in, here's how to do it.
You can have your questions answered on Money Matters. Please go to our website, money-matterstv.com. On our homepage, click on the banner on the right that says, Send Us Your Questions. While you're on our website, you can find information about our host and guests, as well as show notes and links about this show and past shows. Money Matters is also available as a podcast on iTunes and Stitcher, so you can listen to Money Matters while you're on the go. That website address, again, is money-matters-tv.com.
Welcome back, and I want to welcome our guest, Nick Yizzi from Yizzi & Associates. It's really nice of you to be here today.
Thank you, Patty and Michael. Glad to be here.
Yeah. Nice to meet you.
And I know you're here to talk about, like I said, everyone's favorite topic, taxes.
More taxes.
More taxes. I know that you sent us some questions to talk about. Can we jump ahead to the Affordable Care Act?
I'd sure.
Love to know more about
that. We're not sure where the Affordable Care Act will end up. In fact, I'm doing a seminar tomorrow, and I titled it Obamacare, Trump Care, or Who Cares? but it does impact us, it's obvious that there's some changes that need to be made to the existing health care because the prices of the premiums for many folks has increased dramatically. So there has to be some kind of limitations there. I don't know how they accomplish that. But President Trump is looking to repeal and replace Obamacare. The first night of his presidency, he issued this executive order that really didn't say anything. And IRS came out and basically made an announcement that they're reviewing the executive order and not doing anything at the present time because it had no impact. So there's going to have to be some legislative proposals in order to revisit health care in this country. But I've seen cases where it's helped people who really had need. I've seen other cases where it transferred a heavy burden tax-wise to those that shouldn't be responsible for health care choices of other people. I think some of the problem with it is the expanded Medicaid. I mean, in the past, if you qualified for Medicaid, it was because you were not able to work, there were physical impediments. And under the Medicaid expansion under Obamacare, it became a financial determination. So if you meet certain financial criteria, you're eligible for Medicaid. And some of the, for instance, if you didn't have health care offered by an employer, a family of four can get subsidized health care if they make up to $97,000 a year. Now, the median wages in this country are $52,000. So it leaves a tremendous additional gap there, mm-hmm. at another $40,000, and you're getting folks who are getting subsidized health care, and someone has to pay for that. So there are some inequities there with the health care system that I think need to be rectified.
What do you think drives it up? Is it that all these health carriers are merging, or hospital systems are merging?
I think even though they're merging, I think there's duplication as well with all the expensive equipment that different medical organizations have to bear. So I think cost is an issue. I also think that the technological side of healthcare has gotten out of control, mm-hmm. And it's reduced itself to higher premiums. There's a lot of duplication. But there's also the whole package itself was based on the premise that younger people, if they're penalized, will get into the healthcare system, and it hasn't worked. So they were counting on the premiums from younger people to subsidize premiums for older people, even though the premiums for older people are now age-rated and went up higher as well, and it just hasn't happened. So some of the premises that they came up with, and then there's arguments as to whether they knew it was going to happen, in 2018, mm-hmm. I mean, that's one of the arguments the proponents against the Obamacare was that they knew this was going to happen after the 2016 election, but then we'd have this plan. So there are a lot of things, and I'm not sure if they're going to adequately be able to rectify the high cost of health care. There are some Republican proposals to be able to garner these costs and get them lower and use more creative means of trying to lower the cost of health care. But the other problem you did have is you had so many people who didn't have health care, then they got free health care. So they inundated the system and it jacked up all the cost as well. So there were a lot of factors that increased the cost of health care, and it sort of ripped apart the whole system. So we need change, whether or not the new House and Congress and are going to be able to come up with a change that's satisfactory. I think you just have to be careful that it's deliberate and that it's not going to hurt people who really need help, but also not give help to the people who don't need help.
It's a hot topic.
It is.
Especially
it's going
for
to be difficult
business owners.
To transform.
Yeah. Well, hopefully you can pull something off, rabbit out of a magic hat, right?
We will see, hopefully.
Yeah.
A lot of the proposals that we hear about these days are based upon the consumer having more choices too, like healthcare spending account, health spending accounts and whatnot. So, to your point, your question, Patty, I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, procedures. Everybody's getting the same procedures. Where, you know, if you had some kind of spending account, you might think twice about getting something done.
Yes.
Which isn't great for healthcare, your personal healthcare possibly, but maybe there would be things that you would push off a little bit. Again, you know, you got to make sure that your health stays intact, but they want to put more consumerism into the system. They being the Republicans, I guess you would say, want to put a little bit more consumerism into it, and basically be wiser in how to spend monies. You know, if it's your money, you'll spend it more wisely.
I tell you, I thought I had broken my foot, and not a serious break, but a small break in a little bone, because it hurt at certain times with certain things, and I was paying for health insurance with a really high deductible, and I thought, I'm not going to get an x-ray, I'm going to just wait it out and see what happens.
Yeah.
That's not really smart.
No.
But that's what high deductible insurance right. will do to you.
But at a minimum, maybe you wouldn't have gone to the emergency room, but waited for the family doctor the next
yeah.
Monday.
Yeah.
That saves a lot off the system as well. You know, maybe you get to the same spot from a healthcare system. But I guess, you know, you're right, if it was my family, I'd be going to the emergency room that day. You know,
yeah.
but that's just how we're, you know, ingrained in this country, that we want medical care on demand.
Right.
And maybe it's a product like any other where we can't afford it on demand anymore. It has to be more, you know.
And I think some of the proposals, as I read what Trump is looking for in the Republican Party, is to take some of the burden and the control of health care away from the federal government and put it back to the states and let them control the cost, which might be a more efficient way to do it anyway.
Yeah.
But when you're talking about, you know, trying to control the cost by folks making wise decisions, there are FSAs and HSAs and now this new HRA law that goes into effect January 1st, 2017 that allows a small business with less than 50 full-time equivalent employees to give health care reimbursement to their employees on a tax-free basis. So if they have a single employee, they can give them $4,950. If it's a family plan, they can give them $10,000, and they don't offer insurance any longer, but they can go out and make their own health care choices. And maybe they want to buy an HSA,
right.
which is
so
a high deductible.
Yeah, like a health savings account,
yes.
or a flexible savings account.
Yeah.
And then those people could avail themselves of the marketplace, to the health care exchange, I guess, if
yes.
they otherwise have the
they
income
still
requirement.
Go to the exchange.
So you're kind of like melding the best of both worlds
yes.
here. You know, deductibility for the employer and the possibility for the employees to go to the healthcare exchange.
And actually, that was a bipartisan, including President Obama. He agreed to this on December 13th because he was hoping that if they allow this HRA to help the small businesses, that the Republicans, especially Trump, wouldn't unravel Obamacare to the degree that he
yeah.
feared. So
we'll
see if that materializes and whether it helps or not.
It was literally last minute.
Yeah.
The president did that. Yeah.
Is the deadline January? It was January 1st?
It'll start January 1st, 17.
Yeah.
So if people haven't opted into an Affordable Care Act plan, I think, was the deadline?
That's enrolling in the healthcare exchange.
Yeah.
It was the other day. It was yesterday.
Yes.
It was yesterday.
So they wouldn't
yeah.
be able to take advantage of this credit if their employees aren't already enrolled?
Well, that would be... That would probably be considered a qualifying event, so they would be able to enroll because
because
it's a transitional
it,
period.
So
yeah, they would be able to get in.
Yeah. See, I'm gonna let
if
my
their
small
employer
business
goes
owner
that direction.
Friends know that.
Yeah. I think it'd be helpful for small business.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We hear all about these affordable care you know, that's their number one issue to replace and repair repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act. But do businesses today still have filing requirements that have changed over since last year? Do they still have to file the 1099s, 1095s, or where is it? Does
yes,
anything change
that's
there?
Still in effect.
Yeah.
1095A, 1095B, 1095C, depending on what type of organization, employer you are.
Right.
Yes.
And those employees will receive that, and they'll need to incorporate that information into their 1040.
Yes.
Right.
They're supposed to receive it by January 31st. That's been extended, so it's actually going to create some complications for some people who won't get that 1095 until March.
Okay.
And if they want to file a return earlier, they're going to have the underlying data to be able to put on the return, and hopefully it's accurate until
why
they get the actual form.
Why did they extend it? It seems unfair.
Because it's such an administrative burden to the employer. And if you saw how these forms are compiled, they're very complicated. And you have to go by coverage for every month for every employee. So it's somewhat difficult for the businesses who are consider large businesses with someone who has 50 or more full-time equivalent employees.
But these forms are very important to the employees that receive them because they calculate their premium tax credit, their subsidy, you know, on their what they're entitled to from these numbers.
Oh, for health insurance.
Yes. Yeah. Has to reconcile to your return.
There's so much fallout with pushing that back.
Yeah, the other thing, too, is it has to get simplified. I mean, the Obamacare has really become an administrative nightmare in the way it was structured from the beginning. And hopefully they'll do something in the way of simplification, which is basically what the new proposals for tax reform will be, not just to cut the rates, but to simplify. Whether or not that ever happens, they're talking about the postcard.
Right, right, right.
Might put us out of business, but I doubt it.
Yeah,
what's the postcard?
So I think what Nick's referring to is Speaker Ryan had this 6 points that he wanted to get through for the last 3 to 5 years. These are well-developed plans under the House. I mean, you know, Ryan was head of the Ways and Means Committee, so he knows taxes. And one of his first points was simplification. So Nick refers to it should be simple for most people. 90% of Americans should be able to file a tax return on a postcard, income tax or something like that, you know, or limited deductions in a tax. So, you know, I don't think we'll ever get that simple, but it could get, you know, it could get broader. The rates, you know, some of the proposals out there for the rates is a lower rate system going forward and a higher tax base system going forward. Have you?
Yeah, under Trump's proposals, he wants to reduce the 7 brackets we have now, which range from 10% to 39.6, let's say 40. And he wants to reduce those brackets to 3. He wants to go to 12, 25, and 33. He also wants to raise the standard deduction, which for a single person right now is like $6,350. That would go to $15,000. And
what's the deduction for?
A standard deduction is in lieu of itemizing your deductions. Everybody gets a standard deduction, unless your itemized deductions, like taxes, charitable, medical, are higher than the standard. So you take the higher of the two.
Taxes like property taxes?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they want to raise the standard deduction, and have less people itemize. Right now, there's about 33% that itemize. Under this proposal, it would be about 5% that would itemize. But they would also want to put a cap on itemized deductions for single people. They'd be limited to deducting $100,000 a year, and a family, a married joint, would be $200,000 a year. So they want to change the brackets. They want to increase the standard deduction, lower taxes overall. I mean, I'm looking at numbers, Mike, where it might be like $9 trillion of loss of revenues.
Right.
But on the other hand, the president insists that if we lower corporate taxes, which would also benefit individuals like sole proprietors and partners and subchapter S shareholders, that it's going to have a trickle-down effect in responding economically, producing more revenue, businesses to generate a profit.
Yeah.
So
it's kind of like when they gave people money that year. People got checks. Yeah.
Well, they're thinking it's going to bring in more business, that some of the folks who are moving overseas will now come here because the corporate rate will go from 35% to 15%.
Wow.
The Republican Party wants 20, Trump wants 15, so they're thinking that if we can get lower rates, because we are the highest in the world, that's going to generate business internally.
So with Nick, there's a lot of benefits out there with these new rates, but how are we going to pay for it? It's through what Nick is mentioning, and that is this whole thing that some people call protectionist, but basically taxing imports and exempting exports from taxes. So to the extent that a business might make a car here and they use $10,000 of parts from another country, okay, and then they eventually sell it to me for $20,000, they're gonna say that if you imported those parts, then you're not gonna get tax deduction for it. So when they sell it to me, they pay tax on the full 20. Even though they had to pay $10,000 for taxes for imports, so there's a penalty that's called a border adjustment. There's a penalty for importing, and there's a benefit to domestic manufacturing, which is basically what we hear the president speaking about a lot: making America great again, making America manufacturing again. So I think there's could be something here. I mean, we see it now with this discussion with Mexico and whatnot, but it's much broader than that. I mean, And if you look at the GOP plan that Nick has talked about before, the blueprint, they are big on domestic production and on taxing imports.
That's a good thing, right?
Well, it's a good thing and a bad thing. We don't want to be too isolationist, right? So, I mean, I mean, as an economist, I'm not an economist. So, I mean, how would an economist always balance it? Whenever I read about these, there's usually advice from an economist, and they always say, at the end of the day, it all balances out. So, mm-hmm. to the extent that, you know, we do this protectionist thing, our dollar would go stronger, our U.S. dollar would be stronger, and those imports that you're buying are cheaper. So I guess in the world of economists, you know, I go back to my college days of economics, everything balances out. But unfortunately, I think my clients live in the short term. And, yeah. you know, to the extent that any of my clients or any of the U.S. businesses import, there's a hurt. There's a hurt in those initial years. Whether a dollar strengthens or not is something, you know, that is a longer term view and probably better handled by larger companies, you know, the Fortune 500 companies out there.
Let me ask you guys both one last question. When you talk about exporting goods or importing, understand the tax on a physical good, what about services when people have call centers overseas or I send development work to my partners overseas? How does that get impacted by taxes?
Well, I think that, you know, another way of funding for all these cuts that Nick talked about, and they're mostly at the individual level and pass through like S corporations and LLCs levels, is any business that has operations overseas and has had earnings overseas that have not come back to the U.S. mm-hmm. have never been taxed in the U.S. system. There's going to be a one-time tax on all those accumulated foreign earnings that might be coming from your operations overseas. And that tax can be 8% in some cases and 3% in others, but that's a tremendous number that's going to be used to fund a lot of these lower taxes that we've been talking about in the last few minutes. They say the tax itself can be $1 trillion that's going to be payable over 8 years. So any operations overseas will be, you know, and if they were profitable, probably be harmed by this legislation initially.
I think the unsurety about all the international trade is, what impact does it really have? We've been involved. I mean, we can't manufacture everything in this country. We need other countries' products and services and even personnel. And when you do enter into a more isolationist phase, we don't really know what the real impact of that is.
Yeah.
So, for instance, if you want to have everything manufactured here, that's fine. Do you have the people to run those factories?
Right.
Yeah. Because some companies do it out of the economic dollar, and they'll find cheaper labor overseas. But sometimes you just can't find those laborers here.
There's a big call for that today. They're saying the education system that we have today is not giving us all those skilled workers that we need for this higher tech manufacturing.
Wow. Well, hopefully we'll get it sorted out by the time this show airs.
Of course.
All right, well, that's it for today. Thank you guys for joining us. And thank you joining us. We hope you'll come back next time. We're gonna have James Hanna from Marcum LLP. Thank you so much.